Hey gang, just in time for the Halloween season, we're happy to report we will be back at the Jacob Burns Film Center for the overnight Halloween marathon Friday, October 23rd. We will be doing a live riff of one of the absolute worst Friday the 13th movies. Mm-hmm. It's part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a big woof. I timed it when I rewatched it the other day. 63 minutes until those fuckers get to New York City.
Wow.
I was all that time to drag the goddamn boat out of the lake and across into some sort of waterway where you could get to fucking Liberty Harbor.
We'll get into it when we do the live commentary, which will be super exciting, and everyone should really go see it. But why are they high school graduates? Are they high school students? What's going
on? It's graduates. It's like the senior trip.
Okay.
For graduation. Because because
what a bad idea, by the way.
Oh, a trip to New York?
Just on a boat. You get a whole bunch of horny teenagers on a boat. People will be fucking and sucking until the sun comes up.
People will get sick on a boat, for sure.
No, but like they have their own quarters and everything.
Yeah, big mistake.
Yeah, no, you're asking for it. And I think there's only three adults.
Yeah.
Three adults chaperoning the supposed, like, entire senior class. Oh, it's a wild ride. It's also, there is a moment in this movie where you can tell it's totally the 80s because they've replaced the smoke and grass days of those earlier movies with just hard fucking cocaine.
That's right, man. Mm-hmm.
It's just like all of a sudden Jason's running around and it's like, oh my God, quick, let's do some blow. So we will be on hand to kick off this marathon. Lots of great horror movies involved in the lineup that admittedly I did program. Hoping to get a couple of preview screenings in. We'll see what happens. But it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be overnight. There's going to be food, a costume contest, beer from Captain Lawrence Brewing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And in case you didn't know that Chris Cabell was actually murdered last time. So I don't know which one of us is going to get it this time.
You know, I heard the Burns Film Center is haunted.
Oh, it might be haunted.
Haunted by the ghost of Chris Cabin.
He never made it out of our Halloween 3 commentary from last year.
There's always a specter by the concession stand.
Go to burnsfilmcenter.org. That's burnsfilmcenter.org for tickets. This October, the 23rd, it's a Friday night. We will be there live commentary. Friday the 13th, part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. Hello, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Eric Siska.
And we hate movies. Hello, everyone. Welcome to We Hate Movies on the Sideshow Network. Thank you for tuning in, as always. This is the third week, man. That time's already flying by, of our Listener Request Month. This episode comes to us from Charles in Minnesota, who had this to say.
Hey, guys. This is Charles from Richfield, Minnesota, and I want to recommend The Deadpool. This is the last movie of the Dirty Harry franchise. It has Jim Carrey as a strung-out rock star, Liam Neeson as a B-movie horror producer, Guns N' Roses extras, killer RC cars, and of course Clint Eastwood as Dirty Harry. What's not to like? So that's my recommendation, and I hope you appreciate it. Bye.
So here we go. It's The Deadpool from 1988, directed by a guy hilariously named Buddy Van Horn. Up front, I want to say this about this movie. He kills 11 people, one of which he shoots in the back. Our hero, ladies and gentlemen.
There are so many moments in this movie where it's like, you know, you could just arrest them.
Yes,
now.
Yes.
Like, he like disarms people, and then he's just like, now that nobody's looking, I'm going to murder you.
Well, he's, especially the ending, he is very Jason Voorhees.
He really is. Speaking of fucking Friday the 13th.
Exactly.
Jason Voorhees in a sweater vest.
Jason takes downtown San Francisco.
Oh. My mother dropped me in a lake when I was young. Those campers weren't watching. Then I had to start taking out the trash. Those campers are also slinging weed as far as I can tell. AKA getting the death penalty. My blood's boiling over this one. These lousy campers.
He's a, yeah, he's like, he's sort of like a Judge Dredd.
Yes. Oh, he's the law in San Francisco. Do not worry about it.
And his captain, who's the, you know, your standard beleaguered captain,
who is, this guy has received a promotion. He's in other movies.
Oh yeah, I guess
this
franchise. Word of warning: I've never seen a Dirty Harry movie other than this one, so I might not know whatever the if there were references to the other ones.
There's not like a lot of callbacks. It's mainly that guy, as far as I can tell. So it's fine.
Eric, what's your? Have you seen them
First
all?
And last, a nice little sandwich.
A couple of those sequels are pretty good. Sudden Impact, not bad. But
actually, I had a bought a four pack of the Dirty Harry movies like months ago, planning to watch it. And then you were like, "Oh, the Deadpool was called in. We should totally do it." I was like, "Awesome! I got that at home." And then I realized it was the fifth movie, and I had to go like scramble 11th hour to figure out.
You know,
how to do
I'm looking forward to one day having a nice little dad day. You know, watch your Dirty Harry movies, have a sip of beer.
Oh yeah, it's pretty
great. Fix
a
porch.
Oh yeah, you got to restain that thing.
I did that a couple of years ago because I got this series on a Blu-ray box set for Christmas one time.
Oh, you got all five, huh?
I do have all five of them in one location. Oh, okay. And one night I sat down and I watched the first three like in a row, just sipping back on some Springsteens. Like it was a real American red steak evening. It wasn't half bad. But this is the fifth movie, man. This is 5 years after the previous one, and I believe 17 years after that original Dirty Harry.
It's weird because it feels like a TV movie. Like, it feels like Murder, She Wrote the Movie, or Diagnosis Murder, the Movie, you know? And they would do those, you know?
Well, because this is also, like, it's a weird, like, there's a serial killer going around, and we're seeing him do the murders, much like a horror movie.
Yeah.
But because of that, it gives it that shitty, like, movie of the week feel.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it doesn't help that, like, the land of the movie, like, these murders are all taking place in and around the set of a shitty horror movie.
Yep.
Because this makes it feel like Dirty Harry meets Scream 3. is what I gotta go on the set of Stab the Movie.
It's like when the Flintstones met the Jetsons.
Yeah, totally. Where's our Jay and Silent Bob cameo?
Oh no, my new partner is that incompetent nitwit Dewey. He's always bumbling around. He's got a penchant for getting stabbed in the back.
This is the only movie of its kind I can recall where one of the red herrings is a gross ponytail.
Right.
Because we start off this movie with, like, it's clearly a lunatic, like, in an apartment. He's got a bunch of clippings of things all over the walls and whatnot. He's watching the news. He's writing angry letters, like, the whole thing. And you see the dude, like, looking out over the bay or, you know, wherever he's looking. And you just see, like, in highlight, this gross ponytail. And it's like, okay, viewers, recall that ponytail when it comes up later in the movie. That was the guy writing these letters.
It's also a little ponytail. Yeah. It's like you... Because, you know, Liam Neeson is right. These people have, like, these two guys that have this ponytail, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They have short hair, and then they have that ponytail, but I don't think it's really a rat tail. I think it's like a mullet that you tie up.
It's entirely possible, because it's too big to be a rat tail. Because it's about as thick as a garden hose.
But when you say ponytail, I think of a bigger tail than what this guy has. But it's not small enough to be that rat tail.
You're right. I think it's just a tied back mullet, which is disgusting.
It's I guess maybe it's a dog tail kind of.
I think canine for sure.
It does look like something that could be hanging off the back of a golden retriever.
But it's like really obviously it's both. They both clipped it on. You know what I mean? They both have like normal haircuts, and they just kind of clipped a hair. Extension on the back.
Like those Padawan braids.
Oh God.
Remember
were those
that?
Fake?
Yeah.
They have
they
to
clipped
be.
Them on
no
like
one,
if you
was no
it like getting like a red belt or something in martial arts?
Oh no, I mean I think it's in the mythos it's real. Like Obi-Wan had it, but Ewan McGregor said go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
What a bad design choice, that rat tail in
those
prequels.
There's a lot of bad design choices in those prequels.
Because it's a top knot, which is like fine and like, right. Oh, wow, Jedis are like samurai, George Lucas. We get it.
Yep.
And then you get that rat tail going, too. It's like two ponytails.
Yeah. And you know what? A samurai wouldn't have a fucking disgusting rat tail.
No.
So then, you know, after this whole, like, I'm writing letters to the post office or whatever's going on, we meet up with, you know, Harry Callahan. You know, he's just driving down the street.
His first line in this movie is, get off my ass.
Yep. And it's just, that sets up, like, all you need to know. Like, he's officially an old curmudgeon-y man.
I just wish it was him driving this entire movie. Like, that movie Locke. And he's like, oh, what is this guy doing?
That movie Locke would be much more interesting if he was just, like, a surly police detective getting followed by the mafia.
This guy can't even merge, right? Better kill him.
Way to use your turn signal, you dangerous driver.
Oh, obviously it was a woman. Obviously.
And he's like slamming the steering wheel.
That turning signal's turn into your own grave. I'm killing bad drivers now because I'm medically insane.
So yeah, it's a mafia hit. Yep. The movie is starting out with a mafia hit.
Because we've learned that apparently Harry Callahan has put away some big mob muckety-muck named Gennaro.
Yep, generic mm-hmm. Gennaro. Mm-hmm.
San Gennaro.
It's an Gennaro feast.
This is the guy that started it.
But yeah, so Harry Callahan testified against this guy, got, you know, put him away for life or whatever it is.
Harry Callahan didn't kill somebody, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, that's the one you don't get in a movie, when he's just doing like actual police work and not semi-vigilante rampages.
That's what's happening between the movies?
Yeah, he's just acting like a normal cop. Yeah. Oh no, the cameras are on me. Better start killing. Like, he doesn't even carry around that big Magnum gun.
Right.
Until the cameras are rolling.
Uh-oh, the cameras are on. Better come out of retirement, Lucille. Oh, the cameras are off. Better kill this paperwork.
Takes out the biggest pen you've ever seen.
Oh, it's called the Bic Magnum.
Which actually,
it's got
that's
four
funny.
Different colors in it.
The murderer at the beginning of this movie, when we get the information about Callahan testifying, and this guy's like, "Oh, okay, I'll add Harry Callahan to my two kill list." He's got like this gold pen. It's the nicest pen I've ever seen in my life.
It's clearly a gift. Yeah. It's not something you would splurge for yourself.
Well, dude, if you are making like your ultimate like two kill list, you're gonna use a nice pen. Mm-hmm. He's using yellow legal paper, which like I could take or leave, but that pen is gorgeous, and he whipped it out for just such an occasion.
So he gets run off the road by these mafiosos, and they like do the same thing that all the mafiosos do, is wildly shoot with machine guns and not aim. They're like stormtroopers.
Yes! I thought the exact same thing.
It's like they're just shooting every part of his car where he isn't.
Oh, it's a good thing that I've got all the Metachlorians. They can't shoot a Skywalker. My blood's full of this space cancer. Darth Vader's my uncle.
So he flips this car, and this one mafioso like gets up on top of it to like rain bullets down into the car, and of course Callahan with the headshot. And here comes some of the most inappropriate music you'll ever hear, because you see the back of this dude's head blow out, and it's just like,
it's like the hero.
But it's like this. It's
going
also
back
like
to work.
Wistful hero music mm-hmm. mixed with like 80s electronic beats. The music in this movie is all over the fucking place, because it's like all of that weird 80s sounding music. And then because it's a Clint Eastwood movie, you've got just a little bit of jazz trumpet flown in here and there. It's so all over the place.
Do you
place.
Think that was an Eastwood call? Like, if I'm going to be part of this project, you better pepper it up.
Oh, probably.
Make a little trumpet.
Dude, this is a Mal Paso production, man. He's got money in this.
Well, that was my question, actually. Is it possible that this movie was written not as a Dirty Harry and it turned into it over the course of it?
Oh, that could be.
There's nothing on the internet inferring that, but it just sort of feels that way, because it's like anybody could be. It doesn't feel. I don't know
it's
what
it's Die Hard syndrome.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, and then he runs afoul. It's like, you know, this could be a regular detective in any situation.
Because of the whole, like, there's a serial killer whose identity is hidden, and the weird horror movie angle, like, would not really surprise me at all that they were just like, oh, this could work as a Harry Callahan thing. Like, there was, I forget what the specifics were, but this was one of those movies where it was like Eastwood wanted to make X, and they were like, okay, we'll help you out. Warner Brothers was like, we'll help you out with that. You want to make a Dirty Harry movie? Mm-hmm. That'll probably raise your chances of making this other thing. Fine. Looks like you're coming out of retirement, Lucille.
Anything for the bridges of Madison Counties.
So then we cut to the chief's office, which is one of the cheapest sets you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. Like, we're doing a lot of on-location filming in San Francisco, which is actually, it's kind of funny because the city of San Francisco was like another fucking Dirty Harry movie because they were tired of these movies like making it seem like San Francisco was this like crazy crime-fueled wasteland. And it was just like, yeah, that's right. You'll take the permit money, though.
And I mean, this is the beginning of a new character who comes to nothing. A lot of things, like a lot of plots just trail off like this.
Yep.
And this one guy is like, hey, I'm the new lieutenant. I want you to work in public relations for some reason because Gennaro's got a hit out on Dirty Harry.
Yes.
And the whole city knows about it. So he's like, hey, you know, you do a lot of work if you, you know, sit behind a desk and, you know.
That's what interviews. I want to see is Dirty Harry the paper pusher, Dirty Harry going on daytime TV.
Right, because he's like a celebrity at this point since he's been a known murderer for a long time.
Well, I believe even as early on as like that first movie, he's kind of like a celebrity, like a known local celebrity.
He's a goddamn hero cop.
Well, because in that first movie, he's basically going after a version of the Zodiac Killer, the Scorpio Killer.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's literally the same thing. Like, this dude's writing fucking letters in the newspaper and whatever. And, he's heightened to, like, local celebrity.
It's really ripped from the headlines, right?
Yeah,
that first movie?
Oh, but yeah, it definitely is. Yeah. It's, like, this close to a true story.
They should reboot this series for television.
That'd be great.
It would be pretty cool, actually.
Just like Murder of the Week?
Well, I think they... Well, Murder of the Week is Law and Order.
Right, but...
With Harry Callahan.
Yeah, then he does another murder in the episode. So
it goes
it's like
full circle.
Double, yeah.
They kind of have that with that... the hell was that David Duchovny program?
Oh, the one that...
With the
Aquarius?
Manson. Aquarius, yeah.
Did anyone watch that?
I watched like half of it, and it's annoying because...
Is he killing people?
No, but the whole like David Duchovny as this detective stuff is really awesome, and it's a lot of like social issue stuff that was going on in the 60s, and then you just have this dog shit Charles Manson performance from this dude who's like terrible.
And he's actually playing Manson?
He's playing Manson. And it's like, it's one of those things where it's like fiction riding up alongside history kind of a thing.
It's interesting to do a TV show set in the 60s. And we haven't, that's pretty cool.
I saw somebody like when this Aquarius came out that referred to it as like the sister show to Mad Men. And I was like, that TV writer should be fired.
There's actual Mad Men. Charlie Manson. Oh, that's a madman. I don't know about Don Draper, but Charlie Manson.
Well, he was a real mad loon. So it turns out that Eastwood, Dirty Harry, is once again getting sidled with a new partner. That happens in pretty much every sequel.
And we're getting a little self-referential here where he's like,
well, homies, my partners wind up dead. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, oh, all right. And here comes, I believe his name is Al Kwan.
Yep.
This guy who, it's your classic case of like real-life martial artist being in a movie, which means he's terrible. And this guy's terrible at acting. Martial arts, pretty great. But this is like comic relief territory, this guy.
But it's also, I didn't know he was a martial artist, and I just thought he was like a nice, affable, you know, Asian-American actor. And then all of a sudden in the middle, I'm like, oh, does he have to do martial arts? Does he really, like, because he doesn't, they don't bring it up like, oh, this is Al Kwan, or, you know, he's
our martial arts detective.
Exactly. He's like, not only, you know, is he good behind the wheel, but man, can that guy do a high kick? Look out for it.
Not only is he good at the target range, you should see him operate these nunchucks.
When they start giving his backstory, they just start cramming it in, man, because it's just like one of nine subplots in this movie.
Dude, I think it's a feature film version of a TV backdoor pilot. We're still trying to get an Alquan TV show, and we're going to do it through the shitty Dirty Harry sequel.
I know stuff about his grandfather.
So much about his grandfather.
A whole lot about Grandpa Quan.
Oh, I can't wait to see him in this series. the comic relief, probably.
Dude, I think what they were trying to set up was like, this is the last one Eastwood was going to be in, and then it was going to be Dirty Quan. This next sequel, he's going to take over the franchise like Jeremy Renner in these Mission Impossible movies.
Right.
But so this dude comes in.
Quirky Quan.
He comes in, and this detective, or this lieutenant, is like, oh, that would be great. Sidling Harry Callahan with a Chinese American. And to the credit of this movie, all the characters in the room, including Clint Eastwood, just go, oh. Like, fucking really, Lieutenant whatever?
Do you think this, like, paralleled real life a little bit? Like, they told Eastwood, like, we're going to give you a new partner in this one, and it was going to be a dog or something. And then he was like, no. Okay, I guess that'll do.
Dude, Eastwood partnered with a dog? Like Jerry Lee comes in?
Yeah, or your stool would be great.
Come on, stool, let's go take him down. I bet your wood blood is boiling.
Come on. You know, for someone with four legs, you move pretty slow. Buckle up, stool, I'm driving this time. Don't want your stool face to hit the windshield and burst into splinters. Look what they did to my stool.
Oh, an invisible Barack Obama sat on him.
R.I.P. stool. 16-gun salute.
So it's decided. He is partnered with Alquan. He goes, better get a bulletproof vest, kid. Meanwhile, this dude's like fucking 45 years old, kid.
Well, he's still a lot older. This is before Eastwood fell off a cliff. He's still like very virile. Like,
it's 1988. He's still moving around.
He's in his like late 50s. Looks great.
You can tell he's on the edge, though.
Yeah. Now let's cut to one of the other movies in this movie, which is we just cut to Jim Carrey.
James Carrey.
I apologize.
What? I mean, where to begin with James Carrey? I mean, it's weird because, like, watching this movie now, it's bizarre because he's a superstar.
Yeah.
Like, kind of on the decline. But, like, he's fucking Jim Carrey. But in this movie, he's just a no-one James Carrey, nothing actor. And he's on the set. Well, we don't know it's a set. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're in, like, a haunted house. There is a woman on the bed, kind of like The Exorcist.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, now wait a second. Well, that tune sure sounds familiar. Cut to GNR's Welcome to the Jungle. And there's Jim Carrey dressed up with, like, crazy big red hair. Or, like, you know, brown red hair, whatever it is.
Right, like all blown out, yeah, like 80s like rocker.
Total hair metal hair. And he's dressed up like a priest, and he starts lip-syncing Welcome to the Jungle while dancing around what is sometimes a woman and sometimes a dummy.
Yeah.
Which is annoying because, yes, eventually the song will stop. Director Liam Neeson calls cut, and we're on a movie set. But it's the bullshit thing that movies do where, like, what we're first watching is edited as if we're watching part of the movie.
Yeah.
Because that actress does go from, like, a woman to a puppet. Like, inside this thing that's supposedly being filmed in real time. So already it's a gigantic, stupid continuity error.
And maybe when we were watching Jim Carrey mug, there was, like, some sort of apparatus that swapped out the actress and the puppet.
I could do it all in one take. We just build a pulley system. Jim Carrey. This is the birth of Jim Carreying on screen. Yeah. He's Jim Carreying on.
It's like a Riddler dance.
It is. It's It's a precursor to the Riddler, honestly.
Yeah.
And well, he's doing all of his signature faces. I'm surprised he didn't do the arm over the shoulder thing.
I was find a way to get that going.
I was shocked to hear talk out of his ass.
Did you say like arm over the shoulder thing? And I know exactly what you're talking about. And yeah, obviously the ass talking, which maybe that hit the cutting room floor. Eastwood was just like, nobody's talking out of asses in this movie but me. Who is this clown?
It's great because, so in this is my question. He plays a rocker slash actor named Johnny Squares, and it comes to pass that he's only doing this movie because his agent made him, and blah blah blah. There's like a music video tie-in to the movie.
Which
question
is,
mark.
No, what Liam? This is what's. I would never see this movie that they're making.
Yes,
this Haunted Blood Motel or whatever.
Hotel Satan.
Yes,
Hotel Satan. Excuse me. Yeah, first of all, the title like that, I'm staying away.
Oh, I'm into it.
But. Yeah, I'm kind of into.
Well,
this.
Well, but what Liam Neeson says though is that the producers thought it would be a good idea for this music video to happen inside the movie. So you go to the theater to see Hotel Satan, and all of a sudden the movie stops dead for this music video inside the movie.
Yeah, it's a musical.
And make no mistake about it, gentle listener, this movie wants you to believe that the song Welcome to the Jungle was written and produced by Johnny Squares, and he is the one singing it in this movie. Guns N' Roses exists in this movie as background character actors at two scenes. But as far as this movie's concerned, Welcome to the Jungle is a fucking Johnny Squares original piece.
I've fallen into an alternate reality.
Like, right, this is a parallel timeline.
Yeah, yeah. Where's John Rhys Davies?
You've got to slide.
What? Some immigrants talking back to me. Better kill them.
But I'm with you. Christianity's on trial.
Goodbye. Come on, Lucille. Let's get him. That fat immigrant's talking shit. See if you could slide your way around this bullet, fatso.
I was thinking about, music videos in movies.
Yeah.
Maybe it's kind of like at the end of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, when they have that Bryan Adams music video, which like totally destroys any reality that had happened.
Isn't that at least over credits?
It's over credits, okay. But it's still a little bit weird.
But it's still like, it's like a dance at their wedding at the end. It's like you got, what was it, like King Richard the Lionheart hearing this being like, yes, that's a good tune.
What a rocking good love ballad.
Ooh, the bards today are very good.
Is that... Now, I might be getting confused with Prince of Thieves and Men in Tights.
It's Sean Connery.
It's not Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart's
Men in Tights.
Okay, yes.
I'm pretty sure. But yes, you know, now I'm confused.
Because it's one of those things where, like, you need to, like, fade to black and, like, have a music video that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're going to do that.
Right. Well, I was just reminded of another even weirder one. Remember the one in Look Who's Talking Now? With the fucking, the French baby rapper?
Well, that one's bizarre.
And it's like the kids are in this dollhouse, and Kirstie Alley and John Travolta like wake up because they hear a ruckus, and the ruckus is coming from the dollhouse? That video is fucking crazy. And that's right at the end of the movie. Like, it's like directed by whoever, and then we get right into this little French baby rapper.
And there's no credits either, so it's like it's stopping the credits.
Dead stop.
You know, I just remembered that Friar Tuck breaks the fourth wall in the end of that movie, too.
Does he really?
Yeah, he like looks at the camera and he's like, oh, isn't that a fun movie?
Don't worry, everybody, it was all a fun movie. Jim Carrey's kind of breaking the fourth wall in this music video because he's like supposed to be mugging for Liam Neeson's camera, but it's Clint Eastwood's camera or Buddy Van Horn's camera, excuse me. So it stops, like Liam Neeson calls cut and he's like, you're out of sync, Johnny. In comes this ponytail and everybody's like, oh.
But he's doing this like British, like really like highfalutin, like high talking thing. Like he's actually doing a character in this.
Well, he's... Lest we forget, this character is an artiste. Like, this guy is carrying himself, at least on the set, because later in the movie, he trashes all of his own work. But, like, on the set, this guy is carrying himself like he's making some high art here.
Yeah.
He's a real Wes Craven type, actually, when you think about it.
Very intellectually stimulating guy, like, but we're still making horror movies.
Well, that's the weird thing. They show a reel of his movies later, and it, like, it there's no style to it. It's like, some of it's Dario Argento, some of it's definitely Cronenberg. There's, like, a baby being born kind of a scene.
I thought, and I was trying to look through my notes here, because I seriously thought this was just, oh, yeah, I thought it was just clips from other, like, existing movies.
Oh, are they?
Because I think one of them is a clip from The Pack.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah, the Joe Don Baker Island of Wild Dogs
movie. I think
movie?
That might have been episode, like, four.
Three.
Three of We Hate Movies.
Yeah, yeah. So go to the WHMpodcast.com and click on our episodes tab for that one. But no, I was like, wait a minute, I think that's The Pack.
I thought it was like a Cujo ripoff, like a pastiche. But I guess it's sort
I've
of
fallen isn't. Into another alternate reality. Peter Swan directed all these movies now. John Rhys-Davies got me a device to run away from all of these, all of the Muslims.
And when I say got me a device, I mean I killed it. And I killed him and I lifted it off his fat body.
Was it a wristwatch in that show?
No, he had some little gleep gloppin'
remote control thing.
Yeah, it was more remote control than not.
Okay.
Yeah. I think there may have been a watch that let them in on like the countdown to when the next slide was, maybe. Yeah.
You know, I never watched that show. And what, Jerry O'Connell was on this?
Jerry O'Connell. Yikes. And then later his brother took over the role playing Jerry O'Connell's character's brother.
There's another.
Because the show got dropped by Fox,
yeah,
and Sci-Fi Channel bought it for like another season or whatever, and Jerry O'Connell left the show, and his brother Barry O'Connell or whatever his name is came on the show playing Quinn Mallory's brother.
Weird.
Barry O'Mallory.
Finn O'Malley.
Probably.
So we're getting in this fight. It's like Jim Carrey's like, why don't we do something original and creative? I'm working with this shit-ass fucking director, man.
Well, because the doll does do an exorcist head spin.
Oh, it absolutely does.
Right, yeah, and Jim Carrey actually calls it out as being an exorcist ripoff.
And then
Peter Swan's offended.
Dude, this is where Liam Neeson, well, this character is just like, it's not stealing, it's a homage. And I'm like,
the way he says it is
homage,
nuts.
Dude. Yeah. That's a hard H, an homage. So they get in a big fight or whatever, and it's revealed that Jim Carrey has taken a little bit of a break from the junk, and so he's kind of feeling it and whatever. And Liam Neeson like points this out like on set in front of everybody. He's like, oh, you're fiending, aren't you? Oh, I knew you couldn't stay clean, Johnny, and all this shit. They have this big blowout or whatever. And he's like, why don't you go to your trailer? Or Jim Carrey says, like, I'll go to my trailer. Just let me level out, man. And then we'll come back here and make some really good art. And I'm like, oh, man.
And then he gets murdered. Well, it's a weird it's a weird murder because it's like he's doing a speedball and
yeah,
I guess someone scares him to death, really? Like, because he doesn't get strangled.
Someone shoved pills down his throat.
It's neither of those things.
Oh, I'm thinking about Jimi Hendrix. And how they really did
when the
it.
Government killed him?
Yeah, all the 27 Club.
No, he's in there, and then like someone comes in, and he's like, hey, man. And the person takes an inhaler and shoves it in his mouth and sprays him with poison.
Oh,
is what it is. There's like a new drug on the street.
Inhaler.
Yeah, dude. Eastwood talks about the delivery system in a police scene, but minutes later.
Oh, cool. I guess I'll watch the movie sometime.
But, you know, it's this thing where he, you know, you don't know whether or not he recognizes the person.
Yeah.
And it's like he sprays this shit in his mouth and Jim Carrey, for one last bit of Jim Carreying on in this movie, starts running around this RV like he's a cartoon character that just ate a bunch of hot sauce. And it's really like, ooga.
Well, it's the Dumb and Dumber scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he just falls back down on this couch and dies. And they do, again, annoying continuity shit. Like, you see him dead, and it's Jim Carrey just dead on this couch, which is weird because he doesn't often play characters that die.
No, I don't think I've ever seen him die.
So it's weird. And then later, when they're in the RV, and it's like Callahan and Kwan are in there, It's a totally different position of this body, and his eyes are looking in a different direction and whatever. And you're like, come on, just go back and look at the footage.
No,
whichever order you shot these scenes, look at the one you already did.
Here's the problem is all these alternate timelines keep happening. Oh, yeah. And if, like they're writing over each other. So now he's in a different position.
It's like Zero Hour, the DC Comics crossover.
I'll take your word for it.
Please.
Yeah, we won't get into it, but we believe you're telling the truth. So we're at this crime scene. It's now a crime scene, and Quan and Callahan are there. And this is where Al Quan starts in with the fucking jokes, because he's like, wow, I never knew moving to Homicide would get me to meet celebrities. And fucking Eastwood's just like, you're not going to get his damn signature, his autograph or whatever. And it's just like, I don't need the joke cracking.
No.
Because it's already coming from Callahan. Mm-hmm. And it's coming from a couple other people. And this fucking Al Quan is the only one that's just, he's just a joke machine.
Al Quan the joke machine?
That's what they call me down at my local open mic.
Don't you dare partner me with another joke machine. That's what I call them. That robot you gave me last time was terrible.
That's what we need. We need one of these movies where Dirty Harry is up with a robot, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the robot can, like, crunch the numbers, and then he'll be able to, like, kill faster. I don't know.
Harry, the probability of us getting out of this scrape is 100 million to one.
Never tell me the odds, Jokebot. Hey, Jokebot, I'll take it.
Then they drive over a bridge that's coming up successfully.
Harry, you certainly could have also arrested that gentleman. Police procedure says you're only supposed to fire if your life is in danger, but the threat had gone out.
Joke bot, why don't you crunch these numbers? How much would it take to give this punk 3 squares a day on the taxpayer's dime? I say I did society a favor by supplying him with a pine box. You know, someone had a job building that pine box. I'm creating jobs now. And now that punk's got a job pushing up daisies. You like daisies, Jokebot?
Define daisy.
It's a flower. You eat it.
Just picturing Dirty Harry picking flowers and eating them.
These daisies are delicious. Oh. That was a dandelion. Quan, you put another dandelion in my daisy bowl.
Daisy chain? That's something, right?
That is something.
What was that again?
It's a lot of things.
Let's not talk about it.
It's like a wreath of flowers.
We're using a daisy chain right now to correct color.
Oh, it's
to
nothing.
To connect three headphones.
It's not a sexual.
Oh, it's certainly a sexual thing.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. But yeah. I don't know. I don't recall the exact position, but I'll look it up later.
So enter Patricia Clarkson in this
movie. Oh, right. Yes.
As the hard-nosed reporter. Apparently, like a real Nancy Sturgeon stand-in comes in.
Nancy Sturgeon?
Sid Nancy?
Spungen.
Spungen shit.
Yeah.
Whatever. So a real Nancy Spungen stand-in comes in. She's like, is that my daughter in there? Oh, is that my Johnny Squares in there?
Oh, this chick pulls up in this, like, blue Corvette or whatever and starts flipping the fuck out.
And, like, Patricia Clarkson's on scene with her cameraman and, like, you know, she's being really insensitive because she's, like, trying to interview this person that's just finding out that her boyfriend died.
Dude, she gets in this woman's face and she's just like, excuse me, are you related to the deceased? Is this going to affect you negatively? Who are you? What's happening?
Yeah, I know. Like, what footage are you going to get out of this woman?
It's like she would take that back to the news studio and they would be like, well, this is... You're clearly just harassing this person.
It's insane. The level, like the lens is right in her face.
And, it's amazing.
And Eastwood's like, "Hey, get that camera out of her face, lady. Why don't you have a heart like me? A heart as big as the moon. Have some compassion like me, Dirty Harry Callahan."
this is bullshit. You know, you're being really unprofessional right now. You could have just scheduled an interview for a later date, but you're breaking the rules and getting in her face. Really unprofessional.
Give me that camera. I'm going to do to it what I did to Jokebot.
And he hucks it.
Yeah, he does.
The shot of this camera hitting the ground is one of the funniest things. Because it's just this Eastwood toss. You kind of get some POV from the camera. It. Like, yeah. No.
It's like, yeah, you're going to look at my tweed jacket for a minute, then you're going to fall on the ground, camera.
Because this thing just, like, hits the ground and, like, you expect, because it's a movie, like, things are going to be a little exaggerated. Yeah. This thing's going to, like, break into pieces.
Yeah.
But it's very realistic. Like, a little tiny bit of it chips off. Yeah. And Patricia Clarkson's like, oh, well, great. It's destroyed. Oh, man, that camera.
Callahan 1, camera 0. Your move, camera. I'm here all day.
Then he's looking over his shoulder, seeing, like, tourists with, like, Polaroids. Like, oh, my God. They're after me.
That camera put a hit on me from the grave. Ghost camera. Don't trust cameras anymore. Those Amish were right. They'll steal your soul right out of your body.
If this movie ended with him becoming Amish, I would have loved it.
That's the natural progression of the film, right. The whole series, really.
I think so.
I got to retire to Pennsylvania Dutch territory.
But no, then that's that movie Frantic takes place.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Now there's been an Amish murder. Gotta suit back up again.
Is that the right Harrison Ford
No,
movie?
You're thinking of Witness.
Witness. Yeah, Witness. Witness. Yeah. What's Frantic? What's he doing in that movie?
I think he's in Europe or something.
Oh. Something about an airport.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Witness. Yeah, where the there's a Amish murder.
I gotta solve this Amish murder the old-fashioned way. I have to build a wooden magnum and start murdering Amish people.
That would actually come in handy with vampires too.
Oh yeah, oh, yeah.
Maybe that'll be the sequel after that.
My scary Callahan, vampire hunter.
So Patricia Clarkson kind of like sues or something, threatens to sue him for $2 million.
Threatens, is the
and you know
word.
the captain's all put out, and then the lieutenant's like, "We can't do this." She basically like says, "I'm gonna forego this lawsuit if you have dinner with me,"
which is just like, whatever. Come on, character, don't do that.
And they're having,
sue these people.
Well, they have two dinners. One, they're just kind of drinking beers and hanging out at Muldoon's.
It's a real Muldoon's. And I was like, man, is this... did Callahan pick this place?
He's drinking a real... he's not drinking a Bud Heavy. He's got like he's got himself a Guinness there. Oh, Callahan. He's an Irishman.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. That's
this is in character.
Listen, I studied.
I'm drinking a Guinness. That's as dark as I'll go if you get my drift. Harry Callahan. I gotta prepare. Go to the mother country.
Dude, that would be great. It's like Boondock Saints 2, but with Harry Callahan.
I would love it, yeah. Mm.
Maybe someone murdered my sheep farmer father.
Or maybe he comes across the Boondock Saints.
It's like, you're doing it wrong.
So he has to kill them, too.
I would love if in the first 5 minutes of Boondock Saints 3... a door just gets kicked in, and it's like now Clint Eastwood as Dirty Harry, and he just murders them, and it's a movie about something completely different.
Here's an idea that can't happen because Charles Bronson's dead. But why, in like 1981, why wasn't there a Freddy versus Jason with Bronson versus Eastwood?
And like,
maybe it's even Callahan versus Paul, whatever his name,
Kersey.
Yeah, like it's Death Wish versus Dirty Harry. Like,
oh yeah, that would be great.
And you know what? Like, make it out of continuity. Like, it's, you know, whoever dies, they can come back for another movie, whatever. But
just
like
Jason and Freddy.
Exactly.
Like, I would also take Charles Bronson versus Jason, or Charles Bronson versus Freddy.
Look at you, pun scum. You got lake all over you.
Gotta go kill that big roundhead over there in the hockey mask.
Hey, leave those kids alone. Or, like, so who else could it be, though, if it was like an Expendables type thing? So Paul Kersey, Harry Callahan, Mitchell could be involved. Get Joe Don Baker to sign up for
absolutely.
This movie.
And they're like fighting monsters. They're all like, sure. They're like an elite squad to fight monsters.
I just want a winner takes all battle royale, though. Like,
Gene Hackman as Popeye Doyle.
Yes. Yes.
Yep. Guaranteed. Mm-hmm. That's a good fucking police
Get Serpico in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a real police rumble I want to see.
Zombie Serpico? Or
he's alive.
Oh, okay.
He makes it through that movie.
Frank Serpico, the real person, is still alive, I think.
Oh, yeah, really?
He moved to Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of the filthy city. He'd had enough. Because, you know, Eric, the thing about the end of Serpico is Serpico still loses. Because he realizes that no matter what, no matter who he takes down, no matter how much corruption he snuffs out, there's always going to be somebody else.
Sounds like a pussy to me.
I always assumed that it just caught up with him.
Oh, no, that's what the movie is. It's Harry Callahan, Paul Kersey, and Popeye Doyle chase down Serpico to kill him.
He's bad-mouthing the department. He's giving us all a bad name.
They're all on the take, yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the thing is, I don't... Like, Callahan doesn't play by the rules, but he also would not be taking bribes. There is one of these sequels where he takes down a ring of corrupt cops.
Oh, that's fun.
Because these cops are, like, taking it upon themselves to just actually do, like, Death Wish-type stuff and just murder these criminals. And he's like,
boys... You're taking the fun out of it. You're a bit on my corner, if you know what I mean. Hey, guys, it's all about the thrill of the hunt.
So this first dinner kind of comes to nothing.
Because she wants to do a profile.
And he's like, no fucking way. No dice, lady. I'm taking this Guinness to go.
Dude, if he just carried a glass of beer out of the bar.
I'll bring this back tomorrow, Laura.
And the bartender's like, it's okay, you're in here every day. I mean, there's like six movies going on, right?
It's a lot to juggle in like a 95-minute movie.
The next movie we get is, it's more of a Death Wish, more of a Dirty Harry thing, which is a holdup at a Chinese restaurant. They're in Chinatown.
Yep.
This is when Kwan is just like trying to get as much backstory as he can in 80 seconds or less. Go!
Dude,
like,
it is...
I used to be in gangs. I used to be in a triad, and my grandfather is actually super, super, really superstitious, and what else happened? What else is Chinese?
Because then a dude gets shot through a window. He would have kept going with Chinese accolades, but a dude gets shot through a window.
And this is somehow a dude gets shot through the window, and Callahan's like, "Ooh, I got a good zinger for this." So he kind of like sneaks in, as opposed to like busting in or calling for backup. He's like, "Hey, Kwan, you do legitimate police stuff. I got a really good zinger." And he's sitting next to this terrified woman, somehow in the restaurant. Seconds later,
he sneaks into this thing like a cartoon character,
and he's just sitting there at the table. He's like, "Hey, I read your fortune cookie." Yeah.
You're shit out of luck.
And he blows this guy away.
Just obviously straight murders this dude. You're shit out of luck. Blam.
Not like, freeze, I'm the police, you're under arrest.
Yeah, totally does not identify himself. That guy dies not knowing who murdered him.
It's just like some, it's just some guy at the restaurant shot him.
He's going down to hell. Like, what was with that one-liner?
I don't even remember the end of it. Oh, fuck.
And then so like there's all these, the dudes in this gang look like a bunch of beach bums.
Yeah.
And they're all just like trying to take him out, and he's shooting people into fish tanks left and right in this scene.
And it just so happens, and then this is when we find out, we've not learned that Kwan does martial arts, but one guy gets away and Harry's chasing after him. You think it's going to be a Dirty Harry chase, but like Kwan just kicks his ass, and again, pretty sweet martial art moves.
Yep.
He's like, hey, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he goes, because like he references a line that the lieutenant had earlier in the movie about like the whole like teaming him with a Chinese American would be good for the morale of the department or whatever it is. And he comes up to him and he's like, "Wow, it appears teaming me with a Chinese American is good for the department's public image." And like taps him on the shoulder and walks away. And Kwan's just like, "Did you see what I did back there? Did you see? I took that guy down with my bare hands and my feet, to be fair. I didn't fucking shoot three dudes in the face."
That guy's still alive. Now we could find out who they were working for, what they were doing.
Exactly.
Now we could do some actual police work.
No dice.
We find out that the guy that got killed in the restaurant, just incidentally, right? There's no larger scheme here. Happened to be one of the producers of the movie that
He's
had
the production accountant.
Okay. Who had the death list in his pocket.
Right. So let's explain the Deadpool now. Yes. So they've discovered that a bunch of people, Liam Neeson included, on the production team of Hotel Satan.
Jesus, that sounds so dumb.
They have really cool production jackets, and I kind of want one.
Yeah, I was eyeing that. Yeah. Those nice little satin crew jackets.
Because you know what it is? It's the sick, like, snap button. Mm-hmm. It's a shiny jacket, too. Oh, man.
With a nice deep embroidery on the back.
Right, I had a jacket like that that was Chicago Bulls, man.
That's pretty cool.
It's a shiny starter jacket. It was great.
Wow, a Knicks fan.
I know. It was, well, yeah, everybody loved Jordan to a degree.
Sure, you gotta play that game back in the 90s. But the Deadpool is everybody got together and said, hey, as a fun game, you know, let's write out celebrities and who we think are going to die in the next year or next time.
And an interesting twist of this is that they're only local Bay Area celebrities or like people that are in the Bay Area. So like Liam Neeson, the whole thing is Liam Neeson has Jim Carrey's character's name, Johnny Squares, on his list.
Yeah.
So he was like, well, Johnny Squares is going to be in the Bay Area for a couple months shooting my film. Better put him on here.
And he put Harry Callahan as well. Yes. Because Harry and like, you know, when confronted about it. By the way, Patricia Clarkson puts this together.
Yep.
They just find a list in his pocket, in this dead guy's pocket. And Eastwood's like, weird. Sure wish I didn't kill anybody. I could have asked a question.
The only thing he thinks he solves is at one point Al Kwan's like, look what they wrote next to Johnny Squares' name, R.I.P. And he goes, hey, Kwan, R.I.P., rest in peace. And I was like, yep, you cracked it, Callahan. like a fucking good Nazi code breaker. You did it.
Oh, that would have been great, him in the Imitation Game.
I just cracked Enigma. Get out of my fucking face, Benedict Cumberbatch, if you get my drift.
H.H., Heil Hitler.
Get the machines running, boys. Jokebot, get on it. I would just love it if, like, Al Kwan or Jokebot or anybody in the vicinity was just like, yeah, we fucking know what rest in peace is. You're this star detective. Rest in peace is the only thing you've solved.
The world's greatest detective. Everyone always wanted him to play the old Batman.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm one of those people.
Where was that supposed to be?
Well, no, it just was always a rumor. Like, oh, that'd be such a cool idea, especially when Eastwood was still doing it. You know,
the Frank Miller one, Dark Knight Returns. Yes. Right? Like everyone was like, oh, it'd be great to get Eastwood.
Oh,
to play
that would have been cool.
And so it's wait.
R.I.P. Rest in peace.
Well, I mean, Eastwood's still alive.
No, I mean, I meant that opportunity. Yes, dead. Yes. Clint Eastwood's still alive, directing movies nobody wants to see.
But the weird, again, Patricia. So there's this list, and there's no like, hey, Kwan, you want to like go to a coffee shop and talk about what this might mean? Like, nothing. The next scene is Patricia
Maybe we could talk about your rich cultural background.
You could pepper that in, and I could tell you about all my ex-wives. Hey, Kwan, you know what? You know what's been keeping me up at night? Not knowing literally everything about your grandfather. So let's get back to that over lunch. Or maybe talk about this case or whatever, which they never, ever do.
Nope. No.
He's just like, well, eventually this will play it. Hey, Kwan, stop with the books. Eventually this will play itself out in a mano-a-mano situation, and me and Lucille will take it over. Lucille does my thinking for me.
So, yeah, Patricia Clarkson, like, breaks the news about the Deadpool, and he's like, oh, wow, that's a pretty good detail. So then they question.
There's a scene of him watching television being like, oh, so that's what it is.
And, you know, he confronts Neeson. Neeson's like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I just only picked celebrities. You know, Johnny Squares had a drug problem. That's you know, probably was going to kill him. You know, you're a high risk. You know, they got the whole fucking Italian mafia after you. By the way, that's a C-plot of this movie.
Yep.
So I figured you'd be dead pretty soon.
By the way, this whole conversation where he's questioning Liam Neeson is taking place at Jim Carrey's funeral. Oh yeah. In attendance, it's the first scene with Guns N' Roses. There's fucking Slash. There's Axl Rose. There's the other two nobody remembers. Mm-hmm. And they are just there at this funeral. And it's there's like a priest, and Slash has the fucking hat on.
Take your hat off.
yeah, absolutely.
Show some respect.
Take off that bone hat while you're there, please, Slash. And he's like, you know, we're trying to have the fucking funeral for Jim Carrey over here. Not a place for a fucking police interrogation.
All right, all right. I'll walk among the tombstones to talk to you. I'll go real fast so it's nonstop right to you. You know, the Reaper took him. He was taken by the Reaper. And now you're taking up my time.
Part three.
Then he goes out. He takes Patricia Clarkson out to a real nice restaurant. Not a restaurant, because this is the 1980s, black as sin, wood panel, brass fixtures, and you can get yourself a nice $12 Salisbury steak there.
Oh, absolutely. But here's the thing. Couple things about this restaurant that are fascinating to me. This restaurant has a couple of details that we cannot miss. One of which is it's called the Zero C Restaurant.
Oh, really?
Zero C. And also, to get to the Zero C Restaurant, you go through the Zero C gateway into an elevator that takes you up a couple flights, and then you walk along this long-ass sidewalk, and then you get to the restaurant main gates. Every time someone comes and goes from this restaurant, that's how you have to do it. What an obnoxious setup.
I mean, it would fail. It's not even like, because it's not a, what do you call it, like a revolving restaurant or like, you know, a really nice view. It's just like
second story.
Yeah, I know. No one would know it existed. I'm like, I'm not going to go through that rapey parking lot just to get to your shitty restaurant.
It is so obnoxious that this is how you get in and out of this dump.
And obviously Eastwood picked it. You know, you don't see the salad bar, which there definitely had to have been.
Absolutely. This is like a independently owned Ruby Tuesdays.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like that salad bar is coming with everything. Mm. Eastwood gets his fucking pennies worth of this thing.
You get your choice of baked potato for sure.
a lot of cubed ham.
And
a little more cubed ham for me and my lady friend.
Hey, waitress, salad bar's out of cottage cheese. Let's get that shit refilled before my soft serve ice cream gets here.
Well, it's not, Harry, it's not that important.
No, it's the fucking point of the matter. Fill your fucking salad bar. I don't want cottage cheese, but I better see it there. Where's all the shredded cheddar to put on my salad? Oh, nowhere? Because this is a mismanaged fucking salad bar?
Let me talk to the manager. Lucille wants to talk to the manager.
Hey, I don't care that the cottage cheese ain't stocked up, but Lucille's real pissed off about it.
Her blood's boiling.
I mean, this whole scene is just a prelude to, one, a scene where two guys, like, say, hey, it's Harry Callahan. They follow him out to the parking lot. And you're like, oh, shit, here it comes,
yeah.
And he's like, hey, man. And he pulls out this Magnum and puts it under this guy's throat. And in a Herculean show of restraint, doesn't blow this guy away, right? And he's like, no.
My God, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him. Oh, my God, I'm going
to
kill him.
Someone talk to me in public in front of my lady friend whilst we were both digesting. Holy fuck, I didn't kill him. Somebody call Guinness. I didn't fucking kill him.
It's another alternate timeline.
One where I'm not an unhinged murderous cop.
And of course, he's like, hey, I just wanted your autograph because I think you're such an awesome cop.
And here's the thing, these two gentlemen, you're clearly both two 45-year-old mustachioed guys asking for autographs. This is a one-way train to loser town. Give me a fucking break.
And it's not like Johnny Squares. It's a local cop. Yeah. Even if he is a hero cop, come on.
And it's just this whole thing about, oh, yeah, we're just so glad you stood up to Gennaro. There's some good people in this town standing up to this scum or whatever. And he's like, You got no idea how close you just came to having your brains painted all over the front of Zero C restaurant's door.
There's a timeline that's coexisting with this one where I murdered you.
The problem was I had 3 steaks for dinner, so I was a little slow on the draw. Had I not just finished all 3 of those steaks at Ruby Tuesday's Endless Steak Tuesdays, yeah, I know when to come here. You'd be dead, buddy. I would have been more filled if that pain in the ass had remembered to fill the goddamn fucking cottage cheese bucket at the salad bar. Boy, my blood's still boiling from that.
So they walk away, and, you know, Patricia Clarkson's like, oh, that was fun when you pulled out a gun on nobody for no reason.
She's like, you're getting your 15 minutes, Callahan.
And the other guy's like, oh, man, better change my shorts.
Yeah, oh, wow, I was just talking to this hero cop, and he made me shit my fucking pants.
That's your autograph, buddy.
Hey, save them drawers. There's my John Hancock for you.
It's also great because it's 1988, and I guess that phrase of 15 minutes of fame wasn't that famous yet. So Patricia Clarkson had to say, you know, Andy Warhol says everyone's famous yeah. for 15, you know, just has to go through the whole lineage of
that's
it.
That's right, Missy. You better cite your sources when you talk to me.
Hey, I know Andy Warhol. I'm a cop, not a fucking caveman. I know my Warhol quotes.
So they get into this elevator, and obviously the mafia starts shooting it up like nobody's business. They're like 2 floors down, you know, 100 meters away.
I could do this with my fucking eyes closed. Yes. It's unbelievable that they lived through this.
And also these exposed elevators in movies.
Yeah, you're asking for it.
Yeah.
Dude, this is, you never go to the Zero C restaurant. It's just, it's a death trap.
But it's great because they're firing, and they both drop to the floor, and he's covering her. And clearly, if I'm firing at this thing, I'm like, oh, wait, they jumped down and I'm shooting at nothing right now. Let me save my bullets.
It's a see-through elevator. Exactly. You know what's going on.
And they're just they're reloading and loading and loading again.
It's outrageous. I mean, this scene goes on and it's like more bullet holes. Patty Clarkson is screaming, 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 screaming. And Eastwood's just like, can we get on with the movie, please?
My midichlorians won't allow them to shoot me.
I'm bulletproof.
And they come out. He comes out because, again, they have to reload again because they've used 6 clips on this dude on nothing. And they both get blown away. You know?
It's like as many bullets as they took to get Sonny Corleone on the causeway.
This is one of the ones he shoots on the back, right?
Yeah.
Just like,
you've exhausted all your bullets. I've used the force to deflect them.
This isn't a back one. It's for some reason.
I think one of them runs and he shoots them.
No, right? That's in the car scene.
At the beginning. One of the mafia guys tries to run away. It's fucking hilarious because they try to get to the getaway car and Eastwood like fires and this guy goes to open the door and it's like, unlock the fucking door, Jerry! And he turns around and Eastwood blows this guy away, but then the second dude gets away.
Again.
He only murders one person in this scene.
Arrest that guy.
Yes.
Shoot him in the leg. Don't shoot. Doing kill shots every time.
It's not like he's. And it's not like he's shooting in the chest because he's not a good marksman. It's headshots every time.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. He's getting them right in the noggin.
I've lived through the zombie apocalypse. It's literally just me and Lucille left. Cut off the head or destroy the brain.
That would be a great TV show, too.
Dirty Harry just in the zombie apocalypse. Yeah.
Fear the Walking Callahan.
It's from the zombies' perspective.
Hey, anybody see a point to this show? No? All right, just asking. Continue to fear the walking dead.
I mean, we'll see, but fucking whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now we got cut to prison.
We got to take a trip to. Well, I guess it wouldn't be Alcatraz. No. I wish it was though.
They closed it down.
That's a pretty good Eastwood movie.
Oh yeah,
I'm escaping from Alcatraz using a spoon and my grit, and these clothes I lifted.
So yeah, we go to this prison.
He goes to this big bruiser guy, and he's like, "Hey, want a carton of cigarettes?" Yeah. He's like, "Sure."
All you got to do is stand when I talks to this guy.
And he goes up to him, and he goes on this long-ass mailman metaphor, and he takes this shit for a walk.
Oh, because yeah.
He goes up to Gennaro, and he's like, look, Gennaro, it's got to end with the killing.
You nearly took out my lady friend and destroyed my favorite way to get to my favorite restaurant. No one can get to that restaurant now that the elevator's broken. Look, I get it, Gennaro. I was pissed off they didn't fill up the cottage cheese too, but no reason to go shooting up my favorite dining establishment.
So he's like, all right,
you... Right now, you become the mailman.
And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And
he's like, you're the mailman because every week I'm going to send a letter to my big buddy over there. And if I take care of his mother and take care of his parking tickets. And then if he don't get none of those letters because something befalls me, guess what happens? He's going to go talk to you because you're the mailman and you need to refund his stamps. And there better not be a long line.
And he's going to expect tracking information.
I love it that, like, this whole system of, like, I'm going to mail you letters addressed to this dude.
Yes.
And you have to deliver them. But if your guys kill me and he doesn't get a letter, he's going to murder your ass.
Isn't there also a thing here where they're like, and he's in here for cannibalism.
Oh yeah!
And if he doesn't get my letter, he's gonna eat you. He's gonna bite you up.
He's gonna start chowing down on you like me at that buffet.
You know what? This guy is the head of the fucking mafia. I'd be like, so what? You know what? You just got that big goon killed because the second you leave. All of my hundreds of goons that are clearly in this prison, I'm safer inside a prison because I'm a mafia guy than I am outside.
Right.
He's dead. He's just totally dead.
They're gonna find a way to kill this
And he's
guy.
Like, how many? It's like, no.
The guy, like, Eastwood goes back and he gives the dude the cigarettes. And then the guy, he says, like, oh, yeah, see that crumb bum down there I was talking to? You know what he said about you?
He said that smoking kills, and anyone who smokes is a fucking moron.
And then this guy's like, grrr. And then this, like, mafia kingpin's like, whoo! And, like, gets in his cell and closes the door.
I just feel like then, like, Dirty Harry turns and walks away, and then, like, five guys shiv that big guy to death.
Exactly! Yeah. Instead, he's in his cell trying to figure out this Baroque mail system that he just laid out. Wait, am I allowed to be closed on holidays? How does that work?
Now, this is when we cut to a very important scene in the movie.
Is there one?
No. It's a comedy show.
Joey.
No, we cut to Slash from Guns N' Roses on this, like, fucking... It's supposed to be like a sinking pirate ship or something, and he's got a harpoon gun.
Yep.
And Slash from Guns N' Roses fires this harpoon gun, and we're filming this dumb movie again. We're back to fucking Hotel Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And Liam Neeson is
We're back in this movie.
Yeah, and Liam Neeson is flipping out. There's a great, like... G side plot where Liam Neeson has had it up to here with this special effects guy because something goes wrong with the doll at the beginning of the movie and he's like, you're the worst fucking special effects guy in Hollywood and all this stuff. And then he's like, the harpoon was supposed to hit the dummy, not the window. No more cock-ups.
Well, I guess he's a red herring, right? Like, because you think, like, that's what it's going on.
Yes. This is, like, the second red herring of the movie is this guy. This put-upon special effects wizard.
Yeah, you're led up to think maybe he's Roy.
The second kill that the serial killer makes is the one with the critic, right? The lady?
Well, this is technically... The second one, because is the killer responsible for the production accountant, or is that just happenstance?
No, that's just total bizarre happenstance. Yeah. That has nothing to do with anything.
Okay, so the killer, so there's this Pauline Kael-esque film critic who we see on TV. Again, this dude with his little ponytail is just in his apartment watching all sorts of local TV.
Yeah.
And there's this critic who's like, you know... Pauline Kael famously, like, hated most movies, right?
Yeah.
You know, she's a very difficult critic. And that's what this lady is. And so she's at her, like, very nice, paid for it by a famous film critic salary apartment in 1988. And, like, this dude bursts in there. And it's... here's the thing. It's clearly a guy doing an impression of Liam Neeson.
A bad one.
Yes. And it's so obvious that I don't know how they expected anyone to be fooled. Like, you know what? If you really want to send your audience for a head trip or whatever, like, just have Liam Neeson do that audio.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
just so happens this guy's got a really good Liam Neeson impression. Because it's clearly just this guy mimicking Liam Neeson. And I'm like, all right, so Liam Neeson isn't the killer.
What's weird is, like, this guy breaks into that house. And he's, like, stabbing up her couch. And, and getting the knife towards her.
Like, you hate my movies.
He's like, you know who I am, right? Yeah. Right? No? Here are my credits. And my name is Peter Swan. And she's like, oh, Peter Swan. Yep. And I thought he was going to let her live just to identify the killer. But
right.
No, what's the point?
I also thought he was trying to, like, have her die from natural causes because my heart medicine, blah, blah, blah. And he's
I'm going to keep cutting up your couch, lady. I'm going to keep cutting up this couch until you die. It's you or the couch.
But he stabs her to death, right?
Oh, yeah. She's brutally murdered.
And it's this weird, like, to your point, the whole red herring thing, it's always problematic in movies like this. If you're going to do a red herring, you need three legitimate actors.
Yes.
And one of them turns out to be the killer, and the other guy turns out to be the real red herring. In this movie, it's Liam Neeson, total legitimate actor.
But it's 1988, so no one, like, really knows him either.
But he's third billed in the movie.
Right, you know?
So he's been in stuff, but at the same time, like, it winds up being nobody. At the end of the movie, it's like, oh, wait, guess what? It was somebody you never saw before.
It's a sixth guy. Yeah. It's totally inconsequential, which is bullshit with this kind of storytelling.
And you know, honestly, I'd rather it just be Liam Neeson at the end of the day.
Like, sure.
Then he's fighting Harry Callahan at the end, and that's something I could almost watch.
Like, do you think this was a thing where, like, maybe the script, like, said it one way, and then it was like, no, we'll change it. It's going to be so out of left field. The audience is going to be so surprised or something.
But it's not, you can only surprise me with somebody that I've been introduced to and care about.
Right.
If it was Kwan, I'd be like, holy shit, Kwan was the guy the whole time?
Wow, that's really unbelievable, actually. It's literally unbelievable.
Or maybe somehow tie in the mafia. That'd be nice.
Heaven forbid we tie some of these threads together.
The mafia loves gambling. Deadpool's a gamble.
Yeah, kind of a gamble, sure. Yeah,
you never know who's going to die.
They never lay out what the stakes are as far as the game's concerned. I want to, because this is like big Hollywood money in here.
Either that or it's a sex game.
Oh, that could be.
What's the
like
prize?
the winner and the loser, like
daisy chain.
First place and last place after daisy chain.
Yes.
Another thing missing from that salad bar was daisies. How could you have a salad without a little floral effervescence?
So, all right, let's cut to the third act of this movie.
We do see the special effects guy buy a motorized car, and that comes to nothing. Like, is that what is that?
He's buying all sorts of, like, little things from, like, a hardware store. Mm-hmm. But so then there's, like, to get us to the end of this movie, there's a fucking Phil Donahue-esque character who's, again, local San Francisco celebrity, who's running some, like, you know, shitty, sleazy, actually more like a Jerry Springer probably kind of show. And so then we see him, like, come out of his big mansion, and he's, like, going to play tennis. And then this, like, little race car comes up. As this guy, he backs out of his driveway and then, like, is sitting in the middle of the road, like, slowly adjusting his mirror. And we see the killer, like, with this dumbass remote control car. And he drives it under Phil Donahue's car and blows it up. And this dude's murdered, like, the Dark Knight.
What? Like this, this whole, like, the... Like, it looks like a little, like, black Corvette or something. It's like a little remote control car, but apparently I can't see it in the scene, but there's, like, 15 sticks of C4 under it or something.
Yeah, how much explosives could be in this little remote control car?
It's amazing.
It's a little remote control
car
that's able to take out an entire real car. and a whole Phil Donahue.
It's amazing. And so
it's the full Donahue. I just got the full Donahue.
It reminds me of that Batman the Animated Series episode, Beware the Gray Ghost. They stole that from this.
Which one is that?
There's a guy with remote control cars that drive under people. That's one with Adam West.
Oh, interesting.
It's a good one.
Yeah, I think they also reused it in Grand Theft Auto.
Isn't there? Doesn't it happen in Death Wish 5? Am I nuts? I remember a remote control car playing something in that, but well, I have to rewatch that whole series.
Yeah, I don't know. So, yeah. So that happens. So, like this, someone's Deadpool list is like getting people really checked off here. Like the movie is leading us to believe more and more that it's Liam Neeson.
R.I.P., which stands for Rest in Peace, Eric.
R.I.P., Rest in Peace.
Oh, wait. Oh, really?
Yeah, I just cracked that myself.
Oh, my God. All right.
Well, I like to do a little bit of puzzle work on the side.
There's a quick scene that means absolutely nothing in this movie where he's like,
most of them.
Yeah. Well, this one especially, because he's like, I think we have our guy.
Oh, this is my favorite scene in the movie.
And so they go downtown, and him and Quan get out of the car, and it's this Vietnam vet throwing gasoline all over himself, and he's like, I better be on the news, Mr. Luthor. I'm going to fucking light myself up. And so to talk this guy down, because he will only talk to a news person that he recognizes, Patty Clarkson has to go talk to this dude with Eastwood pretending to be a cameraman.
He's a local celebrity. How do you not notice this?
Exactly. It makes no sense. And she's like, no one's going to watch you die today, sir. We're not going to put this on TV.
But he even says, like, he knows about the case because he says he's the guy. So you would clearly understand the very high-profile detective working the case.
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty stupid.
I mean, it just kind of happens, and she's like, we're not going to film you, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, you know what? And he kind of drops it. He's got a road flare. He drops it. And, you know,
she's like, I want to live.
They're talking him down, and Eastwood's like, when can I get the headshot? When can I get the headshot?
Wish I could have fit some bullets into this camera. Retrofitted Lucille to this camera. Action.
But this guy bursts into flames.
He bursts into flames because the gasoline trail like rolls onto a flare. He's like got two flares and drops one. It rolls. This dude sets on fire. And an amazing turn of events here. Eastwood just pushes Patty Clarkson to the ground and then jumps out of frame. And we cut. And a dude who's 45 years younger than Clint Eastwood tackles this guy who's on fire. And then you cut back, and it's Clint Eastwood again.
Yeah, he's got a little, like, schmutz on his windbreaker now.
Yeah.
I think it was Lawrence Taylor.
Well, what's also great is, like, the shove he gives her was totally unnecessary.
Yes.
She was way too far away from the
and
blast.
She wasn't going to do anything.
Yeah.
Sorry, been waiting to do this all movie. Hoof. It's my fetish. I love to push women to the ground.
And, I mean, again, that comes to nothing.
It's absolutely
nothing.
It's
got nothing to do with this movie. Because this is just a Murder, She Wrote episode with a couple of things peppered in.
Well, like, we're padding it to make it like an actual movie with stuff like the mafia thing.
Yeah.
Because, like, a few scenes later, he's being followed by some dudes. He beats the shit out of them. They're like, no, 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 it's not what you think. It's not a hit. We're your mafia-hired bodyguards. Because you know what? That conversation he had with Gennaro back in prison, it really fucking stuck.
Yeah. Now all the five families support Callahan and everything he does.
It's ridiculous.
And now I'm a member of the Costa Nostra. What is it?
Cosa Nostra.
That too.
Look, we're gonna agree to stay in the olive oil business. We're not gonna be selling drugs. And Harry Callahan is officially the greatest man who has ever lived.
Oh, and by the way, our boss that was pushed around in prison by a flatfoot cop, he still is our boss.
Because that other guy, we totally had him murdered. So that threat he set up, totally invalid.
Absurd.
And it's very absurd.
That's the only scene that they're like, hey, we're your bodyguard, which is actually kind of a fun little thing to call back ever.
But yeah, to have those guys like literally help out Callahan at one point.
Or like get murdered by the other guy, like they, you know, something like that.
Do something besides take a punch.
So the big scene, the famous scene of this movie is the it's Harry Callahan's time to die. So the guy's like, hey, that radio car thing worked out pretty well.
Yeah, worked out well the last time. Might as well repeat the method of murder, even though he never does that at any other time in this movie.
Hey, Quan, you ever see the movie Bullet? You better buckle up.
Nobody's wearing seatbelts in this scene, by the way.
So it's a car. It's a good car chase of.
But one is a toy car. It's stupid.
Why? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So not only is this toy car loaded to the gills with explosives, it can also go. And this is not really an exaggeration, like 90 miles an hour.
It's going as fast as Callahan's car because he pulls up and he sees this toy car and Al Kwan is just like, say, that's pretty silly. Time for a joke. And he's like, no, Kwan, no joking. I've seen this before. Let's get the fuck out of here. Like he puts it together because at the last blast scene, he's like, oh, looks like a tire from a toy car. R.I.P. Rest in peace.
They figured out a way to shrink down a real car. Some crazy scientist is after me.
Dude, doesn't Ant-Man take place in San Francisco?
Yeah.
You got fucking Hank Pym on the case?
Yeah.
Shrunk that car down.
Hank Pym is trying to get me. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to beat the crap out of Michael Douglas at the end of this one. You just wait, Pym. I'm going to beat up your mad scientist ass. My blood's boiling.
So they are running away from this toy car.
But the amazing thing is this serial killer, who we learn is a schizophrenic nothing, you know,
this
nobody.
Dude named Rook.
Yeah, he is not only driving a real car to keep the toy car in range.
Oh, yeah.
But controlling the toy car loaded with explosives. This guy, I don't know what, he's a genius or what?
He's a talented wheel man.
I kept thinking that the stuntman or the special effects guy had to be riding shotgun.
Yeah.
Not two people cannot do this.
And that's another thing that movies like this would do, right? It's the old Scream thing. It's not a killer, it's killers kind of thing. So yeah, it's this dude Rook, and then the special effects wizard has to be there, right? He's gotta be there. There's no way this dude is driving 90 miles an hour in a real car and also just using his thumb to do the same thing with a toy car.
Texting while driving is dangerous.
Driving while driving is even worse.
Well, this guy does it.
Mm-hmm. And so he corners him. And this is a bit of bullshit because Callahan tries to speed over the car after it's cornered. And this dude lets it blow. And only the front of the car explodes. Kwan's got shrapnel in his chest.
And Dirty Harry is totally fine. Again,
yes.
Impervious.
How
to
is
any
he
damage.
Not dead?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I think it's because he's got the metal exoskeleton Skynet.
Terminator?
Yeah, he's a Terminator, I think.
I'm also a Terminator. Turns out the joke bot was me. I'm T-45. 1845. I came back to 1845 to kill John Connor's great-great-grandfather, which I did, stopping that and ensuring the machines. But I just kind of hung around and have been a detective ever since.
I hung around until I met Doc Emmett Brown. And I shot him in the back over a matter of $80. Then I took his fancy train to the future.
So this psychologist comes in, the end of Psycho, and explains multiple personality disorder.
Yep.
And he's just like, so this guy thinks that he's Liam Neeson and blah, blah, blah. Go get this, this big character, Rook. Everybody likes Rook, right? What? Yeah, it's just nobody.
And Kwan lives, by the way. He just, he gets some shrapnel. But he's like, oh, my partner gave me some pretty good advice about wearing a bulletproof vest. It just might save my life.
Oh, well, isn't that great? Al Kwan lives to see another day.
He also got painted symbols on his body as grandfather did.
Dude, there's so much about it. Do we see the grandfather at the end or no?
I don't think so.
Good time to get a nice little grandfather cameo.
I would love it.
We've been talking about him the whole fucking movie. We've been talking about him more than Rook.
I want to see him in the background holding a cane, cheering.
Yeah,
good job.
You did it.
I agree. Actually,
Dirty Harry's like,
is that a weapon in his hand? He's raising a weapon,
and he shoots
Kwan,
him dead.
Your grandfather tried to assassinate me with his cane, so I took him out with a clean headshot.
I thought it was a blow gun with a poisonous dart.
I was fighting Chun-Li in the street. And he was cheering in the background. So I threw him through a bunch of crates. And then I punched a car till it exploded.
And then I kicked his head off. But in my defense, I thought he was Blanca. Your grandfather looks a little bit like Blanca. You can't hold that against me.
Did he get that a lot before I murdered him? Looking like Blanca?
Yo, I'm sorry, but he should have been wearing a shirt.
Orange chest hair is only on two people, apparently. Your grandfather and the aforementioned Blanca. Look, no shirt, red chest hair, spewing lightning. I thought he was on bath salts. Didn't want him to fucking eat me. God. That Chun-Li's a real piece of shit. Just stays in the corner and kicks. I left that fight. That was making my blood boil.
Well, some good came from this situation because I shot M. Bison in the head.
Thus taking out a whole country's leadership.
Whatever. So yeah, it's Rook. And then, of course, it's the end of the movie. So Patricia Clarkson has to get kidnapped.
Absolutely. She gets duped because... Again, this guy calls the news desk and he's like doing this bad Liam Neeson impression. And he's like, yes, I want to give you the exclusive story about me, the film director. Come down to this abandoned area and we'll do a scoop. You'll get the whole thing. And she's like drooling. So, yes. She, you know, she runs to get down there with her cameraman. And again,
and she's talking to him before.
She's talking. Spoken to him. Christ.
She's talking to him.
Yes, she knows what Liam Neeson sounds like, and she gets duped by this dude's horrendous impression.
So they're in a fun house or some horse shit.
It's some, yeah, it's kind of like the end of, what's that Jean-Claude Van Damme movie we did with
Hard
Wilford
Target.
Brimley? Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's like where they're keeping a lot of parade floats for some reason. Yes. Like, it's a madhouse.
And Callahan goes down there, and, you know, it's now it's a long, prolonged cat and mouse thing. Callahan gives up Lucille at this point.
That's right. He kicks her away.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, Lucille wasn't too happy about that.
Because he's about to cut her throat. Cut Patricia Clarkson's throat. And he goes through his whole, like, I'm the villain. This is what the whole movie's been about. And no one could care,
it's
right?
So
no
tedious. One cares. And do I need, like, a 10-minute foot chase?
Yeah.
You know, they're just running around.
Just running around this thing. Of course, there's steam everywhere. This dude gets Lucille and is firing it at Eastwood.
There's something about Foley work for footsteps in the 80s that drives me nuts. Yeah. It's like that, like, it's super annoying, overly loud, like those Kit Kat commercials where everyone's right. popping the Kit Kat.
Oh, man, that sound effect is making my skin crawl.
Mm-hmm.
This is like everyone in the 80s in these movies were like tap shoes.
Bunch of Ben Vereens running away from each other.
Oh, this is the worst possible timing, Rook. I was just on the way to my performance of tap dancing.
You know, my performance of tap dancing.
I was going to go do it at that big San Francisco theater they must have. Maybe if I kill you in time, I can make the curtain call.
So Patricia Clarkson, like, gets away. There's, again, an amazing thing where Eastwood, like, throws a chair through a window.
Yep.
And he escapes out of it. And then we cut to this dude.
Hey, Obama, are you using this?
We cut to this dude 40 years younger than him jumping into this dumpster.
It's LT again.
I think it was his son. Because this dude this dude looks like fucking Clint Eastwood, like, just enough. I was like, is that Scott Eastwood? And so, like, he jumps down, and we get to the docks, and this dude's running around with Lucille. We're doing the whole Batman Begins, like, where are you? And then out of the fucking fog comes the most ridiculous thing this franchise has ever seen. Here is Clint Eastwood holding this fucking harpoon gun that Slash had earlier in the movie.
And he says,
you're out of bullets.
And it, which means...
It's time to be arrested legally.
Exactly. It's time to go to jail forever to pay for your crimes. Mm. It's time for him to be a police officer.
And maybe find out, like, this guy's a serial killer. Chances are these aren't the only five people he's killed. So there's a bunch of unsolved murders that you could probably get him for.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you know, give closure to some grieving families.
No, we're letting this thing launch and pinning this dude to a door. holy shit, this guy gets murdered.
And of course, you know, the cops finally come and they're like, where's the killer? He's like, he's hanging out back there. And by that I mean I ritualistically killed him.
It's some cold-blooded shit because he does this. And if I do that, even as like a hard-nosed detective or whatever, I'm like, holy fuck, like I really killed that guy.
Yeah.
He just slowly walks over, puts the harpoon gun against this shack, picks up Lucille off the ground, stares at this corpse dead in its cold eyeballs, and flips the gun around and puts it back in his pocket and walks away.
Also, you need to keep that gun there because that's what's going to keep you out of the clink.
Now it looks like you just shot this dude, like an unarmed guy, you know?
It's like there's nothing on this guy. Like, what happened? Oh, yeah. Don't worry about it. He stole my gun, so I had to use this harpoon gun. But we found your gun back on you. Yeah. Patty Clarkson will tell you the whole story. I'm just going to walk away from this crime scene. The two of them just walk off into the night together. Cue that fucking trumpet, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, just another night in the Bay City. And you're like, how are you walking away from this? This is fucking days of paperwork.
Yes. Or at least three tribunals.
And that's why there wasn't another movie, is because it's the rest of time he's been filling out paperwork.
I just love that people saw this movie and still to this day are like, man, just one more Harry Callahan movie. And even Eastwood has said, like, that's the dumbest thing ever. Like, why would this guy still be a cop at pushing 90 years old, you know? But it's like, why did you watch the Deadpool and you were like, yeah, I could go for another one? Clearly, this is out of gas.
Liam Neeson just comes to nothing. He's just out of this movie.
Yeah. He vanishes from the movie.
Why don't, instead of like, I don't know, one of the mafia scenes, have him get killed. You know what I mean? Like, that would be a great scene.
Oh, fuck, we just lost our main suspect. It's like, Liam Neeson's a main suspect through most of the movie.
Or just cut to him and show him fade from existence. It's just like, another timeline has been elapsed.
Son of a bitch. It's time to slide.
Wasn't he in an alternate timeline? What was that movie where he's doing something?
Liam Neeson?
Yeah, like it's a movie where he doesn't know if he's real or not.
Oh, Unknown.
Unknown.
That is a bullshit movie.
He doesn't know if he's... No, it's one of those... or something, right?
It's one of those, like, you don't exist kind of things. And he's like, no, my name is whoever. This is my wife. And the woman's like, what are you talking about? It's another perverted Lady Vanishes type movie.
Right.
Like, I never saw that person before. Like, that's what it is. And it's fucking stupid. And the big, the big, like, plot thing of the movie is someone has found a way to, like, genetically modify corn that's going to, like, help feed starving nations. And it's all like,
that's really corny.
It's all a weird, like, stealing science movie. And I don't remember how Liam Neeson's a part of it, but yeah, Unknown is what that
yeah
movie.
I Thank saw it too. It's trash.
Would anybody recommend the Deadpool?
It's right on the cusp. Probably not. I do want to watch at least the first one, or, you know, and tweet at me and let me know which ones are worth watching. I've never seen any of them, so it's just a knot. It's a little bit light, and it kind of comes, a lot of balls get dropped that I actually...
Oh, yeah.
There's a better movie of this movie that could have existed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm in the no camp. You know, I saw the first one, and it was pretty good, but you know, I'm still not too crazy about these movies, but maybe there's some good ones in there, too.
Well, you know, I would recommend the first one. Yeah. I'd recommend Sudden Impact is a good one.
Okay.
The Enforcer, that's also a good one. This one, I don't know. I mean, if you're a completist, like, I would just watch all of them. Yeah. You know, I would have accepted that 4-pack, you know, in place of this 5-disc Blu-ray thing I have, because it's, you know, you don't need this one.
So this is definitely the weakest link.
It's the absolute worst of the Dirty Harry Daisy Chain.
Oh, you're making me hungry, guys. Put some cottage cheese on that daisy chain and you got yourself a meal. That's how I stay so fit and why I will live until I'm 191 years old. A bunch of daisies with cottage cheese on top is a California cheeseburger.
That's The Deadpool from 1988, directed by Buddy Van Horn. If you want to get a hold of us, check out our website, WHM Podcast, or find us on sideshow.tv. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We are at WHM Podcast. And of course, right into our mailbag, weallhatemovies@gmail.com. Okay, clue for next week's episode.
I'm going to say one of the greatest actors of all time.
Just one of the greatest actors of all time.
Yeah.
Serpico?
Yep. Next week on We Hate Movies, we're doing Serpico. So until then, when we're definitely talking about Serpico, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Eric Sisko.
Steven Zadak.
Take it easy.